The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, it's time for our Friday forum. In Brussels, the Taoiseach-led calls for countries to recognise a state of Palestine. At home, the fallout ahead of the Garda Representative Association conference because the commissioner not being invited, therefore the minister to stay away. Meanwhile, justice at last for the relatives of those 48 young people found to have been unlawfully killed at the Stardust in 1981. Now, to talk about all of these things, we're joined by Mary Seary Carney, Fine Gael Senator for Dublin, Cathal Berry, Independent TD for Kildare South, and Kevin Doyle, Group Head of News for Independent.ie, Executive Editor of the Irish Independent. Good morning and welcome, one and all. Just your reaction, Mary Seary Carney, first of all, to the result of the inquest.
I am terribly relieved for the families because they, by God, they fight for justice over the years. But I feel today, when the fight is over, the full onslaught of their mourning is going to hit them, I think, because there isn't a fight to fight as such. I personally believe there's an absolute requirement for an apology. In fact, there's an absolute requirement to go back and revise whether there needs to be compensation. And I spent this morning reading the Doyle record from that week in 1981. And I mean, some of the names are fascinating, of Dr. Noel Brown, you know, Gareth Fitzgerald, John Boland. But John Boland on the record of the House, and this is literally from the Doyle record.
And he was Dublin North at the time, which would be the adjacent constituency.
Yes. So he said, the Taoiseach said at the weekend the government would undertake to meet the expenses of any malicious damage type of claim that might be lodged. That's on the 18th of February 1981, the Wednesday after the Stardust.
Okay, and this is
already
what happened in
a malicious damage claim had been lodged.
And this is what happened in the end, that compensation was awarded.
Absolutely, yeah, it was. So £580,000 pounds, Irish punts, was given to the Butterleys for malicious damage. So on the weekend of the fire,
by the way,
John Boland
was quoting
the
price of a house at the time, I read this morning, was 35,000. So you're talking about 15 houses worth of compensation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So in my personal opinion, I say that advisedly because there are highly litigious people involved in this that put an injunction on Christy Moore's song and all of that over the years. But It from the very beginning, how on the weekend of that horrific tragedy, I remember the moment I was, where I was when the phone call came for us to turn on the news. I had to reassure my mother in my teens that I checked fire exits in the local disco. My mother was particularly moved by the family of Caroline McHugh because she was an only child. I was an only child. We followed along that family. The idea that those parents let their child stay at home for a dancing competition rather than go to a family wedding. And he was the head baker in Bewley's. He had baked the wedding cake and was bringing it over to a family wedding in the UK. And then to realise that act of, let their 17-year-old daughter go to the competition with her pals. That act then, that they wondered, when they gave the pen, description of their child, they wondered, did she die crying for her mommy and daddy? It's just horrific. It's horrific. So I think that the whole process of that time, in actual fact, should be looked at and should be apologised for. Because if you have the Taoiseach of the country that weekend already talking about a malicious damage claim, then you have the tribunal not only inferring, but drawing together lines that were later found declared to be completely wrong, of that it was arson, so it was malicious damage, giving rise to a claim of 580,000 when the families for the death of a child, they got 7,500. That was their compensation payment for the death of their child. It is obscene, actually, what happened. So is an apology owed to those families? Absolutely it is, and more than that.
Cathal.
Yeah, huge relief as well, Pat. Obviously, I wasn't in the pillar room of the rotunda yesterday, but just judging by the reporting, I mean, people just feel so relieved. They feel vindicated for pursuing this and that the victims have been completely exonerated, that it wasn't their fault. And I agree with Mary. Look, whether there's a criminal investigation or not is a matter for the Gardaí. They've operation independence. But the government, and I would say the entire Parliament, both in opposition and government, have 100% control of whether it's going to be a state apology.
Eoghan Ruadán this morning was saying that it was because of the nature of the area, an underprivileged area, an under-resourced area, that it was kind of, you know, of course it was arson, of course it was malicious, of course, instead of maybe taking a more objective look at the facts.
Yeah, we've an opportunity now in next week, and I suspect this is going to feature the very first item at 2 o'clock on Tuesday at Leaders' Questions. We have an opportunity for this political establishment, all those decades later, to set the record straight. And I would say we're going to do that as soon as possible.
I mean, the Taoiseach wasn't born.
Yeah,
Isn't that extraordinary when you think about it? Yeah. And, you know, anyone who apologises, particularly the Taoiseach apologises for something that happened before his birth.
Yeah.
I mean, it's quite extraordinary that they've waited so long.
Yeah, like I was only three myself, so I've no physical memory of this, but I still sense the seminal moment in Irish societal history, you know. So next week is our opportunity to set the matter right.
It was Charlie Haughey's own constituency as well, which is extraordinary that he should make that promise that people would be compensated for malicious damage so quickly thereafter. But then it was a different era and there was a lot of pals and pal, you know, old pals act going on there as well, I suspect. Kevin?
I hope we would have had a different reaction if something like that happened. I've been trying to think over the last couple of days, how would it be covered in the media now if we had a massive tragedy like that? And I think the political reaction would be somewhat different. I think we'd probably have moved in a slightly better place in how we look at these people.
Mm. You'd imagine that the forensic investigations would be more sophisticated these days, and perhaps you'd get a conclusion rather more quickly than we finally got.
What I think is extraordinary, Pat, is like Carl was saying, he was three or four. I wasn't born until 1985, so 4 years after this. And yet I feel like I know this story my whole life. Mm. And that's down entirely to the families yesterday. And you wonder how they managed to keep going. Obviously, a lot of parents and grandparents have died in the meantime, the passage of time. But it's extraordinary that they were able to keep going to get to this point. And I remember when I started on the news desk in the Evening Herald 12 or 13 years ago as a news editor, and relatives of the Stardust used to ring the news desk day after day, week after week, with the tiniest little update or the tiniest little nugget of new information that they thought they had found, because they were trying to keep it in the papers, because if they could keep the public talking about it, maybe the politicians would do something about it. So it's quite an achievement that they got the inquest in the first place. But the fact that they've got the result they wanted, and they will get the state apology. How could Simon Harris not stand up in the Dáil and give them their state apology after what has come out in the inquest over recent months? So look, I'm sure it's an incredibly sad day for them, but I think it's a good that the younger people like me, not that I'm that young, but look at this and realise what went on in this country. We're unfortunately fantastic at doing good apologies way after events, and we've seen that in the Dáil multiple times, but I guess to the families that will mean a huge amount.
Yeah, when you think though, when it happened, those who died were teenagers, those who survived were teenagers, so they're not that old now.
No.
So they are around, as Sean Reinhart was this morning to tell us the story of what happened on that night so vividly.
But it isn't just the 48, it's the suicides, the other deaths, the premature deaths through cancer and stress and grief and broken hearts. So it's even a much wider effect that, yes, they're vindicated, but by God, does the state need to give a very, very robust response to all of this, the one that the family deserves?
Do you think it's possible, Cathal, to have a Garda investigation at this point? I mean, I know everything that's been produced at the inquest and testified to, that's fair enough, but forensic evidence and...
So in theory, everything is possible. Obviously, the Gardaí will have to review the coroner's report when they finally receive it. They go down through with a fine comb and see whether it's a viable thing to do to launch. So, I mean, it's in the Gardaí's hands, really. I'd like to see a criminal investigation if possible. But again, I recognise that that's really a matter for the Gardaí to decide.
A challenge in that, Pat, might be we saw that the jury obviously didn't come back unanimously. And the burden of how a majority in an inquest is less than a majority at a criminal court sitting. So if something went to court, the DPP would want to be full sure that they will be able to bring that conviction. And that's the question they'll have to answer. So
it's also interesting when you look back at various tribunals over the years into financial irregularities or whatever it might be, or planning irregularities. you can have all the findings in the world, but then if the Gardaí are to investigate, they have to go back to square one.
Yeah.
They have to gather all the evidence, even though there was testimony and tribunals, they have to start from scratch. Yeah, now, absolutely. They might have a roadmap, but...
They have a roadmap, but you still have to get to a court. The inquest took the guts of a year. I know it was on and off at various stages, but you could end up with an incredibly long trial, and all sorts of things can go wrong during trials. I think there's absolutely no certainty that we will ever get to that space. But I think there is an onus on the guards to now go back and start that process, Pat, and figure out whether there is something that can be done in that space or should be done.
I mean, the main word this morning is vindication at last for the Stardust families. Now, meantime, we hear that Roderick O'Gorman has been subject to some attention. Kevin, what's your take on that?
It's pretty disgraceful, to be honest. I mean, you would worry for where debate is going. So Roderick O'Gorman's, for I suppose people who haven't heard it, I know it's been on the top of the news headlines on News Talk all morning, but his house targeted by protesters, putting up anti-immigration and other kind of slurs outside his gate. The guards were there. They left after a while, but it's clear intimidation.
But what should the guards do? I mean, we talked about it earlier this morning, and whether or not they move in on these guys, because clearly they're intimidating and therefore breaking the law. Do they just go softly to avoid maybe what the protesters want, which is confrontation?
Well, Drew Harris said this going back last year. There was a softly approach. I think the guards admit that they did for a long time take a softly approach to these type of protesters, be it outside centres that were going to be open for asylum seekers, or in the past we have seen this at other ministers' houses. I don't know that... There's an argument. It's a really hard one to police, because I understand the guards think if they move in, if they try to move people off footpaths or stop them obstructing the road, out come the iPhones and it's all over social media. And actually, that's a victory of sorts for those that are protesting, because they get to claim police brutality and that the state is basically clamping down on their free speech.
Yeah, this so is where body cams for the Gardaí might come in very useful, because effectively they've got their mobile phones, but they're on their chests instead of in their hands. So there will be a counter narrative.
The context now, I imagine with GDPR, we won't see much of what's on those body cams. It might help investigations, but you won't see it on Twitter or Facebook. And the problem is that very often when those iPhones are whipped out, you don't get the context. So somebody pushes, shoves the guard, but you only see the bit where the guard pushes back.
Carl?
Yeah, look, obviously disgraceful scenes. My sympathies to Roderick and his family, totally unacceptable. We were just chatting about it before we came in, actually, Pat, and how the boundaries have really dissolved from a TD and from a senator point of view, that anything goes now. And that's a dangerous space to be in. We were chatting about the unfortunate MP who was killed in the UK, Joe Cox, about maybe 8 years ago. And I was chatting to someone who was involved in the investigation. And what he was saying is, it was clear that the assailant thought that member of parliament was to blame for everything wrong in the country and everything wrong in his life. And he was going to take it out on her. I suppose one of the key messages I'd like to get across is that TDs and senators, they have some influence, for sure, but they don't run the entire state apparatus. I think that's an important message to get out there.
But how do you nip this in the bud? I mean, if you're going to stand idly by and take the softly approach, what's to stop them fetching up at the next minister or TD's house, or indeed the local teacher, who is encouraging a particular kind of integration in their school?
Yeah, like we would say, a comprehensive approach is the way to go. Again, we were chatting about it earlier, that we're having a conversation here now inside in the studio. Some people, when they come into the studio, they come in for a debate. Other people come in for an argument. Politicians, how they treat each other, it gives a signal to the public that, if politicians treat each other with respect and with courtesy, the public generally follows suit. But what's happening in the last few years is politicians haven't.
So do you think it really starts in the Dáil Chamber and the kind of slings and arrows that are thrown?
Well, a certain amount of robust debate is really, really important, but you don't want to give people a licence to personalise attacks. And if you talk to people who've been in the Dáil for about 20 years, they've noticed a complete reduction in standards over the last 20 years. It's getting worse and worse and worse of what they see as the Dáil's progress.
Yeah, I think anyone who watches the Dáil would agree with that, and it is, to some point, it is a symptom of social media as well, because it's been done for clicks, it's been done for clipping the quick debate, the quick one-liner, the zinger, and get it out there. I mean, Leo Varadkar talked about it, Pat, in his final speech as Taoiseach. He was a fair man for throwing those zingers across the Dáil himself. when the script writers had got it. So there definitely has been...
Yeah, but there's one thing to have a really good riposte. I mean, you see it at the dispatch box in Westminster all the time. Some people are very good at it and some people are very bad and you get hoots of laughter and so on. But the level of discourse generally, the Speaker of the House tends to keep the lid on, you know, gross insults and so on. Does Arcian Corla not do a good job?
I think Arcian Corla is very challenged in that department. And look, you see it, like it, there's different pockets, I think, within the Dáil, and it'd be interesting to see if the guys agree. But like, you know, Eamon Ryan has become a hate figure for certain people on the opposition benches, not necessarily the main opposition party. There are others, people who get targeted, and Roderick O'Gorman has become a target for certain people because he's kind of seen as the minister for all the places that there are problems. So he's kind of become a lightning rod. It's become very personalised and it's no longer about the government policy,
but you target
the
person. So when the politicians are complaining about the unwanted attentions they're getting and the kind of difficulty in canvassing for candidates to run for the local elections, are you saying, Kevin, that basically they've got themselves to blame if they'd only elevate the tone of the debate to an appropriate level, that they would not be seen in maybe such derisory fashion?
I think it would certainly help if they brought it down a bit, but the horse has bolted, to be honest. It has moved into a different sphere now, and we have people who don't respect that process anyway, don't respect the Dáil anyway.
Mary?
We have had a tradition of parliamentary language being at a certain standard in the manner in which we engage. We do so through the chair. We were just talking about that outside, to keep it a civilised debate. However, once social media took over and the idea of getting as many likes and clicks and trending and getting your name trending on social media, then it becomes about that soundbite, getting that out, looking like you put it up to the man. And that has gone from a lack of leadership or a leadership in absolutely the wrong direction in the Dáil, particularly the Shannon, not so much, although it is creeping into the Shannon debate now. And then you see it out on the street. It's justified, you know, no matter what you do. If you stand up to anything, you say for anything, you're frightened of being cancelled. You're frightened of protests outside your door. You have to have heightened security. You're advised what shoes to wear if you're out canvassing, because that's come out as an advisory from the Cian Corla's office.
Like,
so that you
trainers
can run away quicker. That shouldn't. It's time the politicians stood up. And my experience of politicians is they get up very early in the morning. They work very hard at the expense of their own family an awful lot of the time. And that's across the house. But this personalised attack in politics has only happened since the last general election, or particularly Roderick. Helen is another one, Helen McEntee, where they're named out, they're called. It's a very personalised, that they're responsible for everything. And there is this populist view that there's a simple answer when it is actually very complex, and you have the opposition not accommodating Kevin, the fact that they are very complex decisions, and quite often the government has to act in restraint.
I would just add, Pat, least anyone think I'm sitting in my ivory tower here lecturing the politicians, the media as well. Like the old thing in media was sex sells. Well, actually now anger sells. Anger sells more than sex does nowadays. And that's another symptom of the way society and debate has gone. And I think me, Pat, and anyone working in the media needs to factor that in as well, that it's very easy to go down the rabbit hole of everything is rubbish. Everything is going wrong in this country. It's actually not a bad country at all.
We need to be very careful about where this is going. So we saw the head of the Electoral Commission, her integrity attacked when she came out saying that some of the posters up were misinformation. So a woman who is a lifetime of service as a Supreme Court judge to our state then suddenly is impugned. You see academics who come out and speak and urge, especially after last year and the discussion on our security and on how that the academics that were involved in there were named and vilified. So we have this race to criticise anyone that would even objectively interject into debates and discuss matters. And actually, we need to be very careful. Madeleine Albright's book on fascism as a warning is a stark reminder of where things can go if people don't stand up to it and call out when they see what they have.
When you have, you know, when you're looking at your role models, the GRA, and they decide to cancel the commissioner, Kevin, and not invite him. And as night follows day, the minister was not going to go to a place where her commissioner was not welcome.
Yeah, and this is probably another example of it. Okay, we know the GRA did their poll last year that almost everyone in the GRA says they don't have confidence in Drew Harris. There are obvious issues there. There's other issues with morale. There are all sorts of problems in An Garda Síochána. not talking to the guy doesn't solve the problem. Yeah. So it is a PR exercise, I think, in not inviting him. I mean, in some ways, it probably suits Drew Harris because he avoids being on the top of the 6 o'clock news, getting booed coming into the meeting or having posters held up in his face. So for him, he's probably delighted.
So
that he
basically,
didn't get the
GRA will be talking to themselves then.
Yeah, that's what's happened.
Instead of talking to the people who might be able to do something for them.
Well, I mean, Carl said TDs can't fix everything. The problems in the Gardaí, Drew Harris is the one man who can fix some of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, not the way to do business, I should say. Look, the Gardaí are masters at de-escalation and negotiating, and it's a pity that they can't solve out their own issues. From a public point of view, we'd like to see the policing service, the entire policing apparatus, function properly. Now, there is a lot of pageantry when it comes to these kind of annual conferences, but I'd like to see the minister engaging with the GRA, and if maybe in a week or two they can have an off-table meeting, the three of them sit down and trash out the unresolved issues which are for sure.
I want to move on to Palestine and the recognition of a Palestinian state. And I was trying to tease this out the other day, Kevin. What are we recognising? Are we recognising the West Bank run by the Palestinian Authority, which is acknowledged to be corrupt? Are we acknowledging Gaza run by Hamas, which is an avowedly terrorist state that wants to destroy Israel? What exactly would we be recognising if we recognise Palestine?
I've wondered this myself, Pat, and I don't think it's properly been explained to us, even though all the politicians in Leinster House seem to be in favour of this. I haven't heard anyone speak out against it. We already have a representative here from the Palestinian state. So it's not, you know, normally when you recognise a state, well, that means you set up an apparatus, an embassy, you have diplomatic exchanges. But who are you going to do your diplomatic exchanges with in Gaza? In a scenario where Hamas controls the whole area.
With Hamas?
And this is why it is kind of fodder in some ways to the Israelis who say, well, this is Ireland now cozying up to the terrorist organisation. So it hasn't been explained. I understand what they're trying to achieve by trying to push on the
two-state
debate.
Solution.
Yeah, I mean, you're trying to push on the two-state debate and get the debate back into that space. So I understand it politically, but actually what it means in physical terms to recognise the state, it's not like you're going to open up a big trade agreement or anything like that, which is normally what you mean when you recognise the
country. Carl, what's your take on that?
Yeah, so basically there was a resolution at the United Nations Security Council last night. 15 members there, 12 voted in favour, one vetoed, America, and two abstained, so Britain and Switzerland abstained. It just shows how the hand of history is still with us, you know. I mean, Ireland is very much in favour of the Palestinian people because...
Well, the Palestinian people, absolutely, particularly in their dire hour of need at the moment. But and you want to express solidarity with the people who are under the cosh at the moment, but how do you recognize a state? Like, who are you recognizing? Who do you talk to? Who do you deal with?
It's a nation without a state, just like we were, and that's why we identify with it. And that's why Switzerland probably abstained, because there was a lot of accusations in relation to Nazi gold in Switzerland during the Second War. So history is still there. But to answer your specific question, it's really an aspiration for a Palestinian statehood based on 1967 borders, basically. And that's the aspiration, at least, and the details to be worked out.
This would be the pre-1967 borders.
Yeah, I found myself interesting that Taoiseach's statement on this, he said a recognition of Palestinian statehood. And I thought, oh, is that different to a state? And how do you, and so it caused me to go researching what exactly does this mean? But because naturally, I think we are drawn to the plight of the Palestinian people. So how do you make sure that you support them? But the idea that the Palestinian state doesn't hold title over its own territory, which was what was said yesterday, but I think by the Americans, I looked up what is the criteria for statehood, and they pretty much tick the boxes. To be fair, you know, they have the capacity to conduct international relations. They have a defined territory, albeit go back to those 1967 borders, and they could exert a sovereignty. So why wouldn't we, by the recognition already? It's important to note that members of the European Union, quite a considerable number of them, already accept and recognise the Palestinian state. So Czech Republic, Bulgaria, Romania, Hungary, Slovakia, Sweden, Cyprus. So Spain, Malta, Ireland and Slovenia will be adding to that.
But what would be different tomorrow if we did that?
Yeah. I think that you then empower the negotiation for peace. You empower the negotiation of the Arab-led negotiation. You empower them for that. The more countries that are saying this is a Palestinian state, these are a people who deserve that voice.
But who
at the
are you
table,
talking to?
The two.
You know, are you
well,
talking?
Well, you're probably
now,
talking
we
to
know
the Israelis
that representatives of Israel are talking to representatives of Hamas, whether it's in Qatar or in Cairo. So people do talk to each other, even people they mutually despise.
And it is an absolutely important element of peacemaking that you speak to even the extremists. We've seen that in our own peace process, that you must bring, because the extreme actions of a group is a form of dialogue, albeit not one that we would always agree with and we would see and classify as terrorism. At the same time, that voice and what they are articulating needs to be heard at a table.
And the wider part, that's very correct, Mary, but the wider part is this is part of statecraft and the transactional nature of geopolitics. There's a bigger piece at play as well, which is Saudi recognition and normalization of relations with Israel. So they're going to be trading Palestinian recognition of statehood with Saudi normalization, with stopping the conflict between Iran and Israel breaking out as well. So there's a lot going on, a lot of moving parts. But unfortunately, as a result of the strike from Israel to Iran last night, it looks like Israel and Iran are going to solve their differences in the short term, at least, and there won't be any more tit for tat. But for the people...
Well, as was put earlier by Fawaz Gurgis, you know, Israel's kind of busy at the moment.
Absolutely.
It does not want necessarily another front, and Iran certainly doesn't want an all-out conflict that would involve the destruction of nuclear research facilities, all of those things. And then at the heart of all of this, you have divisions in the Muslim world about religion on top of the problems with dealing with the Jewish people. So
the concern from last night is that the Israeli emphasis now is going to, and the focus is going to switch back towards Rafah in the next fortnight or so. That's the concern. They tried to solve their
last
word
you call on the triple lock. It's going to go.
Yeah, most likely. It looks the double lock. With a double lock up to 2002. That served the country very,
let's
very well.
Let's not have Russia and China determining where our guys go.
There isn't a single instance where the double lock was abused in any shape or form. There is an instance where the triple lock hamstrung Ireland in relation. So if you just look at the evidence, the double lock is a superior. Even when there was only single party governments for the majority of the double lock period, we now have coalition governments, which is an additional layer of checks and balances as well.
On that note, Carl Berry, Independent TD for Kildare South, Senator Mary Siri Kearney of Fine Gael, and Kevin Doyle, Group Head of News at independent.ie, Executive Editor of the Irish Independent. Thank you very much. And that's all we have time for. A reminder that our items from today are uploaded as podcasts, which you can listen to on the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. Just search for The Pat Kenny Show.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on Newstalk.